across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Well, nice to know that you are there, and I'm definitely here, looking out the window here. It's a November day. There's some sunshine there, quite a lot of it, but it's veiled behind this great big band of dark grey cloud. You know those bands that people have when they wear tuxedos, as you call them in America, dinner suits, as we call them in the UK? It's a band right across the sky of greyness. Yeah, I know, you're going to be saying to me, what else do you expect for November in the Northern Hemisphere, Howard? Well, I suppose you're right, and it is a little warmer than it used to be when I was a kid, when Novembers were always icy, but I hate, loathe, and detest the winter. It is something to be endured. But before we know it, it'll be December the 21st, the longest, or rather shortest day of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, and the longest day of the year in the Southern Hemisphere, and then things begin to switch round, and we can look forward to spring. Enough rambling from me here. Hope everything is okay with you. The guest on this edition of The Unexplained is Samantha Fay. She's going to talk, among other things, about dreams and their possible purpose and many subjects connected with that and other linked topics too. Samantha Fay, let me tell you a little bit about her from her biography, which I just happen to have here. The author of The Awake Dreamer, Lucid Dreaming, Astral Travel and Mastering the Dreamscape, exploring the concept of soul travel through dreaming. She has advanced degrees in education and is a Reiki master who writes and teaches all over the world about dreaming, Reiki crystals and intuition. She's also a podcaster like myself. So Samantha Fay, the guest in the United States on this edition of The Unexplained. And I make no excuse for having another edition about dreams. I know we had one quite recently, but I know that more and more of you are telling me, and this is happening to me too, that you are having expansive and expressive and clear dreams at the moment, but you don't know in many cases what they mean. You know, I had one a couple of nights ago that moved and disturbed me because it was so realistic, and I was thinking and operating and functioning in this dream. What's that all about? So we're going to be asking some of those questions with Samantha Fay on this edition of The Unexplained. Like I said, I hope that everything is okay with you. I'd love to hear from you. And you can always go to the website, theunexplained.tv, check in with me and the show, and the place for all of the news about the radio show, the podcast, the TV show. That's my official Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. It's the one with the logo on it. All right, let's get to the United States now, catch up with the guest, Samantha Fay, on the subject of dreaming. Samantha, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Thanks for having me, Howard. I'm such a fan of your podcast. I've been listening for years.
For years? Can you give me an idea of how many, Samantha?
Least 6 years.
Really? Okay. How did you find it?
Well, I started listening to Jim Harrell's Paranormal Podcast back. Yeah, and so Apple luckily pops up suggestions, and I thought, Howard Hughes, I know that name.
Well, you know, I've discussed this with my listener many times before. That is my name, and my mum and dad like the name Howard. And when I go to America, they love it when I arrive at passport control. And they say, hey, they invite their friends over. They say, hey, we've got Howard Hughes here. Howard Hughes, I thought you were dead. And all of that stuff. I mean, I keep saying this, I'm going to have to do another podcast about the other Howard Hughes, the famous one, because
yes,
he was such an amazing character. And it's great to go to America because you go to places like Los Angeles and there's a Howard Hughes freeway in Los Angeles.
Oh, do you have a selfie in front of that picture?
Sadly, I think if I tried to take one, I would be run down by about a dozen cars because it's on one of the busiest freeways. But I think I do remember. Oh, God, 15 years or more, leaning back and trying to get a picture of the thing as it went by. Somebody else was driving, by the way.
That is so neat. Well, I'm a big fan, so it's an honor to be on your show.
Well, I mean, that gets you a place on the show any day of the week, Samantha. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know what to say. Now, look, let's talk about you. According to your biography, which I read for my listener at the beginning of this, I mean, you're a podcaster and something of a psychic teacher. And I talked about your education and the fact that you're a Reiki master and all the rest of it. If somebody was to meet you in a bar and just ask you, hi, Samantha, what do you do for a living? How would you describe yourself? What would you say to them?
Well, if I met someone on the street or in a bar, I would not tell them what I do for a living because here in the South, I would get some raised eyebrows. Usually I just say I'm a podcaster and a writer. But if I was meeting someone open-minded like you, I would say that I'm an intuitive and I'm passionate about teaching other people how to embrace their intuition and really recognize that we all have this innate sixth sense. It's just a passion of mine to demystify this idea that having intuitive dreams or hunches or precognitions is not a gift. It's something all of us have.
Well, we certainly have dreams. And even those people who say, I don't dream, I don't remember my dreams, I don't have them. I mean, they do have dreams, they just don't recall the dreams. And maybe they, in my opinion, and I know it's going to be in your opinion, you know, they really haven't thought about what they might mean.
True. I mean, studies have shown that everyone dreams, although I did come across one study that showed psychopaths tend not to dream.
Oh, really?
Yes, but other than that, we all do dream. It's part of the brain's way of de-stressing at the end of each day and kind of going through the files of people and events and thoughts that we've experienced. So we all dream. We dream during our REM state. In fact, 50% of our dreams actually occur in the last 2 hours of sleep. And so I think a lot of dream recall really depends on what's happening when you wake up. If you're woken up by a barking dog or a crying child or a blaring alarm clock and this thought of you have a meeting at 8 a.m., you're not going to remember any dream because you're just being jarred into, you know, your day. But if it's a Saturday or a Sunday morning and you're able to gently go into your day, there's a greater chance that you will recall your dreams. So it's all about really wanting to remember your dreams. I think intention is really key here.
In your book, The Awake Dreamer, we will discuss this intensively, but you say we all know that dreams can help us solve problems, relieve stress, and inspire creations. But it wasn't until a dream experience that you had in the late 1990s, that I started to wonder if there was something much more going on when we dream. So you know what I'm going to ask? What was the experience that you had?
Well, that first experience was really very simple. I had this dream that I was walking through this tunnel, and I describe it like Penn Station or Grand Central. It just looked like a subway tunnel with white tile everywhere, and I was walking with who I believed was my guide. And that was it. And coming towards me was one of my good friends and my coworker, and she was walking with her guide. And there were a lot of people coming and going through this tunnel. And I waved at her, and she said hello, and she waved at me, and that was it. So it's not groundbreaking. But what was so intriguing, the next day I'm at work, and I'm at the copier, and in comes my friend. And I said, hey, I had the most random dream about you. And I tell her this dream, and she starts finishing my sentences. And she said, I had the same exact dream about you last night. So it made me think, what is happening? Were the two of us having the same dream, or were our souls somehow in this tunnel? Were we visiting the other side? And so it led me into really researching dreams, starting to record my dreams, and starting to look at them as something more than just symbolic messages from the subconscious. Now, I do think a lot of dreams are just that. It's your subconscious mind trying to tell you something about a worry or a fear or a problem in your life. But the book that I wrote is more about what I call these soul travel dreams. When we have glimpses into the future or we get to meet with our loved ones on the other side, you know, those dreams where something really special happens.
But dreams are sometimes very randomized things, aren't they? And it's sometimes very hard to know what the dream, if it is telling you anything, is telling you. You know, some people believe that dreams are like a washing machine of the psyche, that it's just a way of being able to cleanse yourself of all the experiences, to make sense of stuff that goes on in our lives, and there's enough of it these days that doesn't appear to make sense. You go to bed, you go to sleep, and your brain helps you out by wringing it all out like a bunch of washing and then hanging it out on the line for you. Now, that's a very simplistic view of what a dream might be, and I know that you would think that, having researched the way that you have researched, that dreams mean a hell of a lot more than that.
Well, yes and no. I would totally agree with what you just said, and I think you used a perfect metaphor for that, because I agree the majority of our dreams are just that. It's just the washing machine of our day. But what I'm intrigued about are these like 10% of the dreams that you will know when you have them are different. They tend to be chronological, meaning when you wake up and you go over the dream, it makes sense. There's a beginning, a middle, and an end. They tend to be very vivid, and colorful. They tend to accompany very deep and profound emotions, and they often cause some really profound change in our life. I have a story in the book, for example, of a listener to my podcast who was going through a really, really difficult depression, and she just couldn't get over it. You know, she was trying therapy and journaling, and it just wasn't working. And I had done a podcast on the power of prayer. And so she just fell asleep praying, like, please, you know, help me get through this depression. And she had a dream that a woman who she believed was Mother Mary visited her and put her through this like tube of light. She said it was almost like an MRI of light. And she wrote in the email, I don't know what happened. I don't have words for it, but it was realer than real. And when I woke up, all my depression was gone. And she said that was 3 months ago. And as of me writing you this email, it has not returned. So those special dreams I'm talking about, they usually create pretty significant and positive change in our life.
Right. And we can't know, can we, with any degree of certainty, whether she had just consciously decided that she was going to work out her problems, or her problems were worked out for her in the dream state. We can't be 100% sure about that.
No, we definitely cannot be. And, you know, I'm really big on not labeling everything. I don't think it's important to label, this is from your guide, this is from your angel, this is from your consciousness. I think if it works and it helps you on your spiritual path, that's all we need to worry about. So yeah, maybe that was an aspect of her subconscious just appearing as Mother Mary and this light to absorb, but it worked. And that's what I think is so important.
You believe that we all have guides. I would certainly like to believe that. And I think that a lot of my life has been assisted by something or somebody somewhere. I'm still at this advanced age trying to work that one out. But you believe also that those guides can access, have the magic key to get into your dreams.
Yes, I think we have a whole team of helpers on the other side. Lord knows I need a team to get through life. I don't know about you, Howard.
Oh, yes.
I think we have several guides. I think we have angels. And I think our loved ones who've gone before us are definitely on that team as well, advocating for us. And I believe that when we go to sleep, our defenses are down. We're not worried about paying bills and changing out the laundry into the dryer and walking the dogs and cooking dinner and planning for the holidays. We're just resting our body and our mind. But our soul, who's always connected to the light, never needs to rest. And so I think that when we sleep, our soul is able to travel and connect with this team of helpers so that we can kind of check in. You know, like when you have those quarterly reviews with your boss.
Yeah.
I think we have reviews with our guides.
Okay, but, you know, I've tried for many years, decades, to invoke whatever my guide or guides might be, and wherever they might be. And, you know, they don't exactly make themselves known to me. But, you know, maybe they are, as I suspect they are, working in mysterious ways. Let's put it that way.
Yes, it can be incredibly frustrating. It is not easy to connect with guides. I think it's the medium Gordon Smith, who said he sat in a circle, a meditation circle, for 7 years. Every single week, he'd go and sit and meditate with this group of people. And it took 7 years for him to have any connection with his guide. So it takes definitely focused concentration to have that connection. Yet, I do believe that they connect with us in invisible ways, that if we pay attention to synchronicity, we'll start to see it. We'll start to see the way they are intervening in our lives. And sometimes, you know, when you put that request out there, like I can be very persistent. And I just nagged my guides until I had a dream about them. And once you have that first dream or that first connection, whether it's in prayer or meditation or a dream, it makes it easier for the second and the third. But sometimes what works the most is when you're going to bed, like tonight, when you go to sleep, ask a question. You can ask your subconscious, you can ask your guides, you can ask your dad. It doesn't matter who you ask, just someone that you trust on the other side. And just ask that question and say, please bring me the answer in a dream. You can write it down and tuck it under your pillow. And I'll guarantee you probably nothing will happen that night. But if you continue that for about 2 weeks, and every night you look at that piece of paper with your question on it, within 2 weeks, you should have a dream that gives you some further guidance and insight on that.
Within 2 weeks, you can be that specific.
That's, well, I've been recording my dreams for about 20 years. And so it really does help to write your dreams mm-hmm. down, because I've been able to notice patterns. And so when I've been teaching dream recall classes, and that's what I've noticed with my experience and other students who have corresponded with me. So I can't guarantee it, you know, 14 days or your money back.
But I think very few things have a guarantee like that. What has this process then, you said you've been doing this for years, what is the process of recalling and seeding your dreams and all of that? What's it done for you?
Well, it just makes me feel so connected to my inner authentic self. It helps me shed all the shoulds and woulds and what ifs that can kind of bring us down in life. And it reminds me of really and truly who I am and what I'm here to do. It helps me stay connected to my soul purpose. It helps me to be in touch with really everyone around me. I can't tell you how many dreams I've had where I'm able to comfort a friend who's on the other side of the country in a dream state, and that friend will call me the next day and say, I had the strangest dream where you were giving me a hug and telling me it was going to be okay. And, you know, for years I had these experiences and I felt, I don't know, kind of silly about them. Like, I didn't really share them with everyone because so many people just roll their eyes like, oh yeah, you had a dream. Good. But I eventually got very comfortable on my podcast. And I don't know if you're like this, Howard, but you feel like you know some of your listeners after a while. They email you.
Without a doubt, they get in touch, and I know that they're there. And even though sometimes, you know, as we call it in the UK, if you do radio here, yeah, I've got friends who say, you know, radio is all about sitting there talking to the wall. Well, you're not really. Even if you are on your own, as I am in my little apartment right now, you know, you always visualize that one person who's listening, and there's only ever one person listening. You might have an audience. Your audience, Samantha, might be hundreds of thousands, you know, around the world, but you're only ever speaking with one person.
Yes, I love that you always call your audience the one listener. I love that idea. Well, once I got comfortable with my listeners, I started to share some of my dream experiences, and then they started sharing their dream experiences with me. And it was really impactful for me because I realized I'm not alone. So many people are having these shared dream experiences or these precognitive dreams, and they really can help us illuminate what's coming up for us. I mean, one of the most life-changing thing that happened to me was started in 2005 in the spring. And I started having these recurring dreams of someone getting shot in the neck. And at the time I was married to a police sergeant. Mm-hmm. And of course I worried, you know, that it would be him. And so I prayed a lot. I called on, you know, Archangel Michael, who's the angel of police officers, among other things. And I really told him, you know, be careful, heads up, wear your bulletproof vest. The dream repeated for weeks and weeks and weeks. I told everybody about it. I asked friends to pray for him. And on July 29th of 2005, he was shot in the line of duty right in the neck where my dream had stated. And I remember my sister and my two friends, we were sitting in that little waiting room outside the ICU, and they said, this is what your dreams have been trying to tell you. And I realized that by trivializing my dreams or poo-pooing them or saying, oh, you have such a vivid imagination, that was not serving me at all. And so I walked down to the hospital chapel and I just got on my knees and I said, okay, God, if you want me to do something with these weird intuitive dreams, I will, but you've got to make Mike live. And so, yeah, I struck a bargain with God, and it worked, though, because he did survive, even though every doctor said he would not. He did. And I did start to really study intuition and dive into my dreams. But I'll tell you, a lot of people will say, oh, precognitive dreams, they're usually so negative. You know, that's not good. Having that negative precognitive dream made me feel like someone really was out there watching over us. And maybe this was destined and fated for reasons we can't understand, but knowing that this was going to happen and that whoever it was, you know, God, the universe, who gave me those sequence of dreams, it made me feel very connected. And so that's what I think those dreams do for us.
Let's just unpick that, because I find that a fascinating story, and what a moving story too, Samantha. But let's unpick it slightly. You had that dream. Your husband at the time was a police officer. was sometimes in the line of fire as police officers. My dad was a cop, so I know. They're sometimes in the line of fire. Your intuition would have told you that it's likely to be him. Otherwise, what was the point of it, if there was a point of the dream? How did you live with that knowledge then? How did you, because you said it was a couple of weeks later, wasn't it, that he was shot in the neck in that place, in that way? How did you live with that?
It was really hard because at the time, so we were we're both Catholic and we're very traditional people. You know, you go to work, you pay your bills, you get the dog, you get the kids, you go to church on Sunday. So when I started learning to meditate and do Reiki and get into crystals, he was kind of like, "What is happening?" And to his credit, he just kind of went along with it. And when I told him about these dreams, I don't know if your dad was like this, Howard, but I've never met a police officer who doesn't feel he or she is invincible. So I would tell him about these dream experiences, and he would say, "Oh, well, even if it happens, I'll be fine." He said, "You know, I would just fight my way back. Don't worry about me."
And you know what that's about, don't you? I know exactly what you're talking about because my dad was the same. If you didn't have that attitude to your work, and I've got police officers listening to this, if you didn't have that attitude to your work, you wouldn't be able to get out of bed and do it.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to have that to do that tough job. And so I remember that night very vividly because, at least here in the States, what they do is they you work like 8 weeks of day shift and then you have 6 days off and then you do your next shift of midnight shifts, right? So he had just had these 6 days off and he was going back to the midnight shift. And we'd had the most beautiful 6 days as a family together. And we were all having dinner and he had to go in at 9 o'clock that night. And I kept saying, "Please don't go in tonight. Please take one more day off." And he said, I can't, like, my whole platoon is out. They're all at training. I'm the only, you know, sarge on that side of town. I have to go in." I begged him. And I just remember knowing when he walked out that door, it was a terrible feeling. And when his lieutenant rang our doorbell at 1:18 in the morning, I knew right away what had happened. And so again, it was, you know, it was so traumatizing, but there was some odd comfort in knowing that this had been pre-planned. I knew there was a reason for this. There had to be a reason for this to happen. And that brought me a lot of comfort.
Some people might say, what's the point of giving you that information, though, when you can't do anything with it because you can't be sure of it and you can't stop what is going to happen?
True. But I think that all of my pre-planning of prayer, I think it really, really did help. I have a section in the book where I talk about a lot of the studies on prayer and how it really does work. I mean, every study they've done on the effects of prayer has shown that it works. And I think it was Larry Dossey who said, even if just one of these studies is 100% correct, it shows that there's something here. So I think that helps a lot. You know, to kind of give that primer. I remember when the doctor came out to visit me and give me the first, you know, update, the nurse handed me the Archangel Michael medallion I had made him wear. And, you know, police officer, I don't know if your dad was like this, getting him to wear a necklace, as he called it, was very hard.
Yes.
But he wore it for that time when I was having these dreams, and it was covered in blood. And I was so angry, and I just started raging at God and Archangel Michael and saying, "Where the hell were you?" And about 20, 30 minutes later, a nurse came out and said, "Who here is related to the Fay family?" I wasn't able to talk. I was just a mess. But my sister said, "I am." And the nurse said, "I have to tell someone what happened in there." She said, "I haven't believed in God in years. I used to feel I had a special connection. I thought I was a healer. I lost all that years ago." And she said, "But there we are in the room working on your brother-in-law." And she said, "You know, he kept coding. We kept losing him." And she said, "I heard a voice." She said, "Please don't think I'm crazy, but I heard a voice and it said, 'Put your hand on his forehead.'" And she said, I know. And she had no idea who I was or what my belief system was. She said to my sister, "I know this sounds ludicrous, but I think it was Archangel Michael's voice." And I put my hand on his forehead. And Dr. David said, "We've got a pulse."
Wow. And she couldn't have known anything about your premonition, about the preparation you'd made for this incident. She wouldn't have known any of that.
No, I'd never met her before. And I, like I said, I was unable to talk. I kept vomiting. I was crying. It was very, very traumatic. So I couldn't talk to her.
Sure.
And so it was just amazing that I felt as though that was Archangel Michael saying, I am here.
You know, I've never talked really because I'm not in any way even faintly religious. I think there is something guiding us. It may be God. You know, I was born and brought up in Liverpool. I was lucky to be and gifted to have been brought up in Liverpool, a wonderful multicultural, free-thinking city that is a creative dynamo. But, you know, on my mother's side, my granddad, he was a Catholic. And on my father's side, his dad was a Protestant. So I cover, you know, I cover those two bases. But I was in no way religious. But I know that in my life I've prayed for things. I've asked whatever might be there to bring me things. And very often, almost always, they happen. If I ask for deliverance from something, I know there will be, you know, I might part company with some of my listeners here on this view. But there have been situations in my life that go back to when I was at school. And I had a terrible time. I don't think I've ever talked about this on the podcast. Aged 11 to 14 was a nightmare time for me. I went to an awful school. You know, it was a terrible, awful school. Doesn't exist anymore. Thank the Lord that it doesn't exist so other kids don't have to go through what I went through. But I was bullied and suffered because I was not sporting. I was more academic, and it wasn't that kind of school, unfortunately. It was what they call a secondary modern school in the UK. And we became a comprehensive school, and I got better breaks and got exams and got on the radio. So that's the story. But during that awful period, I used to ask for deliverance, ask to win through. And maybe that was always predetermined it was going to happen. I didn't think I'd be having this conversation with you, but those things were brought to me. Also, I was a fat kid, right? I was a big kid, and that was one of the reasons I was bullied at school, because I was very tall, but I was big. And, you know, they'll always find something to get you for. So I was a policeman's son, and I was also large. So there were two reasons to give me a real hard time in a horrible school. And no one did anything about it, and I used to stay off school a lot. But I prayed for deliverance. And my God, I got it. I did. I prayed from all of it. I lost weight. In fact, the school teachers thought that there was something wrong with me because I lost weight dramatically and quickly. And then I became incredibly thin for many, many years. But, you know, I always believed that there was a power that delivered those things to me, and a power that I could not comprehend. And that came without regular church attendance, because I never went to church. Once, when I was very little, I was in a church school, and they forced me to go to church because it was part of the school. But it wasn't my thing. You know, sometimes because I could speak and they said I had a good speaking voice, they'd force me to read passages from the Bible in church. But it was never my thing. But whatever those invocations were, if that's the right word, I believe that they worked. So I've never discussed the power of prayer or whatever you want to call it, but I think that there is such a thing. So I think you and I agree on that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And that's so true. And like you said, we don't know who answered that prayer. It could have been an aspect of you. We don't know. That's why I'm not a fan of labels, because, you know, at the end of the day, we don't know. But it worked. Putting your intention and your request out there brought you the change that you needed. And that's what I find so impactful. Don't worry so much about the who's or the how's or the why's. Just focus on what you're asking for. And, you know, usually it will come. Now, during those weeks that I was having that awful recurring dream, I did pray that he would be safe. And many people could listen to that and go, well, that prayer sure as hell wasn't answered, you know, because he was shot in the line of duty. But he did survive. And, you know, like I said, every doctor for 2 weeks, every day was, oh, today's the day. Like, you know, that's not going to happen. But he did. And he was ultimately safe. And so I think a lot of how we look at our spiritual life is in our perspective.
Kind of connected to that story, are the stories that you tell in the book about ghosts, so-called, appearing in dreams to help solve their own murders. I love all of that stuff. You say that in 1977, firefighters were called to the home of Teresita Bassa, in Chicago. After putting out the fire, they discovered that she'd been stabbed to death. Barca had arrived in this country from the Philippines, lived a quiet life of service as a respiratory therapist. Police could find no motive for the crime. Everybody had loved her. Because of the fire, however, forensic evidence yielded few results. 5 months later, Barca's co-worker, Ramibia Stua, like that you give all their names here to document it and give it some evidence, it was also originally from the Philippines, began having dreams in which her co-worker appeared to be begging for help in catching her murderer. That's an astonishing story. Can you fill in some blanks on that?
Yeah, it is such a fabulous story because it's so well documented. She kept having these dreams where Teresita was telling her who murdered her, not specifically as in first name, last name, but showing her instances of the man at the door and how it all happened. And she didn't really know what to do with this. And the dreams kept coming and coming and coming. And finally, they, you know, did go to the police, and the police were like, okay, but we need some type of evidence. So she had another dream where Teresita gave the name of her murderer, Alan Showery. And again, the police were, I'm very impressed with the Chicago PD. They were like, okay, well, we can look into him, but we need something more. And they did look into him, and they found that he was the last person to see her alive. He worked at the hospital, and he had agreed to come over to her apartment and help fix one of her appliances. But again, they didn't have grounds for a warrant or anything like that. And so she went home again and had another dream where Teresita told her to have the police ask Alan Showery's girlfriend about some jewelry he'd given her. And so when the police confronted Showery's girlfriend, she said, yeah, he did give me some jewelry. They took photos of it. They showed it to Teresita's family. They said, yes, that's her jewelry. That's what they needed for the arrest. And he confessed.
And I mean, look, on the surface, those details that you've given me, there would not have been another way. Well, as far as I'm aware, 1977, the state of forensics wasn't quite as it is today. There wouldn't have been another way to easily solve that crime. And how else could they have got that information other than through that dream?
Exactly, which is fascinating. And even though those two worked at the same hospital, they didn't know each other. But I think that because they were both from the same country, they both were described as just really good, kind people. They both were in the healthcare industry. I think that's how Teresita was able to get into her dreams. Because a lot of people have asked me, well, why didn't she just go to her mom in her mom's dreams, right? Mm. Or someone closer to her. Often when we're grieving so intensely, our loved ones can't visit us in our dream. It's like we put up a wall, a barrier of grief around us. And so I think that's why she was able to get through to this coworker. And it's just an incredible story. Unsolved Mysteries did a whole episode on it.
I'm going to have to look more deeply into that, but I was fascinated to read about it in your book. But people would say, well, that's an interesting case. You know, it's not kind of a case that is front page news. You've got to look it up because it's buried in history. They would say, well, you know, how come Jimmy Hoffa hasn't come back through a dream to pinpoint the people who put him underneath a flyover or underneath a sports stadium where some people believe that he was buried? You know, how come high-profile people who suffer that kind of fate don't come back and spill the beans?
I think it depends on the person themselves. So I used to do readings. I don't do them anymore. But years ago, I was doing a reading for a woman, and her brother came through, and he revealed that he had been murdered. And she said, yes, my brother was murdered. And I saw it was a very random convenience store type robbery murder. And she said, who did it? And the brother said, it doesn't matter. Like it's been done, and they have already been caught for another crime or are in prison. So he didn't have a motive. He didn't really have any vengeance, vendetta, justice. He didn't have that motivation. And so I think when we die, I believe people think we are given, you know, a cloud, a halo, and a harp. But what I've seen and experienced and what research has shown me, we don't change that much when we die and go to the other side. We're the same as we are. And so if you're a very deeply religious person and you don't really want vengeance and things like that, you're not going to be as motivated to come through. Now, as for Jimmy Hoffa, I think people have gotten messages as to where he is. And I just think those have been buried, pardon the pun.
Right, so there are various interests that would stop that information getting out, let's put it that way. All right. Well, I think that makes an awful lot of, I mean, we don't know, do we, Samantha, but that makes an awful lot of sense. But, you know, that was a celebrated case. And people would ask that question. So here I am asking the questions that the people might ask. Now, here's one. And I haven't asked anybody in the dream sphere, if that's what we can call it, this question. But more and more people are telling me, including last week my own sister, because we had a conversation about dreams. And I'd forgotten, actually, last week that we were having this conversation today. But Beryl, my sister, has been having more and more lucid dreams in recent weeks, recent months. So have I, and so have a lot of people that I know. I wonder if you think that is happening too, why that might be.
Yes, I do think that is happening. And I think it's because, I don't know about you, but during the height of the pandemic lockdown, my dreaming world was pretty bare. I didn't remember as many dreams as I normally do. And I started hearing that from a lot of people that I talked to as well. I think during that time of heightened stress, and we were just so divided, I feel, all around the world. And there was just this waiting for the other shoe to drop kind of feeling. And I'm not saying the pandemic is behind us, because I don't know that that's true. But I think the heavy weight of that is behind us. And so I think we're all kind of being able to exhale more in life. And so that's going to allow for better dream recall. If you find yourself having a lucid dream, which is where you become awake and aware in a dream, you're aware that you're dreaming. And often in a lucid dream, you are both the participant and the observer. So you can see yourself doing something, but you're also conscious of yourself doing that event. That's a typical lucid dream. Those tend to pick up either when you're about to hit a new level of your spiritual awakening, so some type of spiritual development might be going on within you and your sister, or they pick up when you are engaging your creative side more effectively. So any right brain activity is definitely going to help lucid dreaming.
I think the power of these things is astonishing. I mean, look, I told my listener in the intro to this that I know that you didn't hear, but I said that I was going to mention to you a dream that I had a couple of nights ago, because it left me, well, I woke up in a very emotional state, almost, I think I was probably crying, but there were so many aspects to it, and it was lucid, and it was exactly as you describe a dream where you are not only the observer, but also the participant. And if I may, and I'm not asking you for dream analysis, but just your thoughts, really. I dreamt that I was at my parents' home in Crosby in Liverpool. Now, I spent my first 22 years there. They were formative years, age 7 to 22. And, you know, I learned my craft of radio. You know, my parents gave me a room where I filled it with tape recorders, as they used to use them before digital stuff, and microphones and record decks and loads of records and stuff. And they were wonderful parents, and I was interested in radio. It was a lovely, happy home by the sea, in Crosby in Liverpool, and it was marvellous. So, quite often over the years, my dreams have gone back there. But this particular night, I am spending time with my parents, and they are both as they were in later life, and I was very, very close to them. And, you know, they've left a void. I know this happens with everybody who loses their mum and dad, but they've left a void with me that will never be filled, and I miss them every single day intensely. But there they are in my dreams. I don't often see them. I'm aware of them being around in the dream, but I saw them and I had nice conversations with them. And then I went upstairs to my old bedroom to bed, and I'm observing myself, but I'm also a part of it. Then I go downstairs and the house is dark and empty. There's not a light on anywhere. There's only like the moonlight illuminating the place. And the realization comes to me that they are both dead. And they're not there anymore. Now, that was deeply, deeply moving. And then this dream ended with me having a conversation by phone, randomly, with somebody that I'd known in my life. I'm not in contact with now. And I'm talking to her, and she can't hear me. The conversation's breaking up. So I'm having this conversation, talking with her, and she can't hear me. But that was all compressed into one mad, crazy, three-dimensional, total intense experience dream, where I knew I was dreaming, I knew I was observing this, but I was having all the emotions. Now, I don't know. During the COVID period, there were lots of emotions with people, lots of fear and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm getting by at the moment. I won't say it's the most wonderful time of my life. It isn't. But it's, you know, they've been worse. So I don't exactly understand, and this ties into lots of people having dreams right now. You know, some people say astrology is behind it. Who knows what it is? But I don't understand why I would have a dream like that. That was weird to me.
To me, that seems like processing grief on a different level. I think that, you know, people always say you have to get through this. I don't think you ever get through grief. I think it's something you carry with you for the rest of your life. And I think you have to learn how to carry it at different stages of your life. You know, there's the first year is always hard, but the years after that are equally hard. Mm. You know, the first Christmas, but then the fifth Christmas without them, and on and on and on. And so to me, you're going back to your childhood home, you're seeing your parents, you're going upstairs, which is symbolic in a typical dream of the higher consciousness. And then you come back downstairs into your consciousness and they're not there. And then you're reaching out to this person that you cared about deeply on the phone, and they're not hearing you. So it's all about telling you that you are processing these losses on a different level, so that you can fully, you know, realize them. That's how I would interpret it. Unless you were talking to your parents and they imparted an impactful message. Usually when they come to us in a dream, they have a purpose, a reason, and a message to share. And you don't wake up with that feeling of sadness and loss and, oh my gosh, they really are gone. So to me, that feels like more of a way for you to realize your grief.
But it was interesting to actually see them. Sorry, I know you were about to say, does that make sense? Yes, it does. You know, interesting to actually see them, because a lot of us have dreams about people we've lost, where we know that they're in the dream and they're around, but we don't see them. In this one, very unusually for me, I actually saw them, and then I went to bed, and then I came downstairs and realized the awful truth. But you know, that none of that has been happening in my conscious mind. You know, life has been no different. It's just odd that so many people, bringing it back to, and taking it away from me, bringing it back to everybody, seem to be having these lucid, involving dreams at the moment. It just seems to be something that's happening to people.
Yeah, well, I do think that we are all going through some pretty big shifts in our life. I think we're going through big shifts in the world, obviously, if you look at the news. But I think we are all individually going through some pretty impactful shifts as well, where we're kind of being forced to strip away the masks that we all wear. And I don't mean that in terms of the pandemic. I mean that as a metaphor. And really look at, okay, what am I doing? What am I really feeling? What am I really wanting now? And I think that is part of what these vivid dreams are trying to tell us. But, you know, if that's the first dream you had of seeing your parents, it could be that they're trying to reach out to you in the dream state. So one thing I would ask you to do or consider is just talking to your parents, you know, before you fall asleep and saying, I'd love to talk to you in a dream. And sometimes just putting out that thought, that request, that intent can really invite them to come into your dreams. And it's such a miracle when we're able to visit with them that way. They have to learn how to enter our dreams. I had a dear friend, George, who passed away at 27 from colon cancer.
Gee, that's young.
And so young. And the first time he came to me in a dream, I was so excited and I rushed over to hug him. And I said, George, and he said, no, don't touch me. I'll go away from your dream. I haven't learned how to touch in a dream yet.
Oh.
And I said, oh, and he patted the bench and he said, just sit and let's catch up. Oh. And so I did. And about 6 months later, I had another dream and he said, I've learned, I can hug you now. And we hugged in that dream. So I think they have to learn how to work with their new energy and with our energy in this dimension that we're living in.
All right. So dreams are something that put us in a receptive state, and that's good for us because we can receive the messages if we want them. And also for the other side, if you believe the other side exists, that enables, it's a portal, it's a way for the other side to reach out to us.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's the most exciting aspect of dreams, is that it is a portal and we can utilize it. We spend a third of our lives sleeping, 30% of our life gone to unconsciousness. why not learn to become more awake in that unconscious state and really start to get some answers, some guidance, some interconnection? It's just fascinating to think of the different things you can do in dreams. I have a whole section at the end of the book on just inventions and music and literature that has come in dreams. I didn't know Larry Page, who created Google, that idea came to him in a dream.
Well, sometimes dreams can be problem solvers. You know, you can go to bed with a problem and you can worry about it, fall off to sleep, and then you've woken up with the solution. So sometimes you're working that out in your head, you know, while you slumber.
Sleep on it really means something. I read Napoleon Hill, the great motivational writer from years ago, when he was trying to write Think and Grow Rich and all of those books, he decided to create what he called his dream team. And he put all these men from the past who had died on his little committee, right? So he had like Abraham Lincoln on there and Plato, like just people he really admired and looked up to. And so as he was falling asleep, he would just imagine that he was sitting around like a conference table with all these esteemed men from history, and he would ask them questions and he would imagine them answering. And to him, it all happened in his imagination. He was creating these images. He was creating these visions of these famous men, creating their answers. And he said very often he would fall asleep and get more guidance on where he needed to go with his writing, his speaking engagements. And so eventually, you know, as we know, he became a very successful writer. And he gave up this process. He felt he no longer needed it. And one night he had a dream where Abraham Lincoln came to him and said, "Why'd you stop the meetings? We really miss talking to you." And it made him wonder, you know, was that really happening in my imagination?
And this is the level, the margin that we're working at with this. You know, it's the kind of our freeways, motorways here in the UK have these things called hard shoulders. It's where you can stop when you break down, kind of thing. They're a safety zone, and you're operating in that kind of hard shoulder area, I think.
Yes, that's a great example for it.
You talk about dreams where people have conversed with their guides or their angels about their own life plan, what they want to do with themselves. I've had a rough life plan, but it's, you know, not always worked out quite that way. But it's been a kind of roadmap. Do you think that we're able to change that roadmap, that life plan?
I do. I don't think we can change everything, though. I really believe, and this is just my opinion, I believe that some things are destined and fated, and there's not a darn thing we can do about it. And I think a good majority of our life is free will. And so I think the trick to life is learning to recognize what's destined and fated and just surrendering to it and accepting it, and learning to recognize what is free will and where in your life you have choices. And so asking for that gift of discernment from your team of helpers, I think, is really, really important. Because we're not here on Earth to be at Disneyland. You know, this isn't supposed to be like blissfully joyful. We're here to learn. To me, Earth is a school. And I believe that we create our soul plan with certain challenges set into that plan on purpose. So, for example, another story I tell in the book, I have a very, how can I say this nicely? I love my mother, but she's very difficult. And it was very hard growing up with a mother who really had a hard time showing love at all. And I had this dream where she and I were sitting across this table and she was holding my hands. Now, in real life, my mom does not hold hands. She doesn't hug. She doesn't pat you on the back. You get the picture, right?
Yeah, well, some people are just not tactile like that.
Yes. So in this dream, she's holding my hands and she said, "How is this working out for you?" And I said, it's, you know, in the dream, I knew what she was talking about, but I didn't, you know, as my consciousness, but I said, "Yes, it's going okay." And she said, "Well, when you asked me to incarnate as a really difficult mother, I knew it would help your soul, but I didn't know how hard it would be on me." And she said, "It's hard being mean all this time." And I squeezed her hands back and I said, I know what it's doing to you, but thank you. It is helping my soul more than you can know."
So it was basically your fault. You asked for that, for the experience.
Okay, the mother I know would love to hear you say that. Yes, it was my fault.
Right. So there was a plan to it.
There was a plan, yeah, that she had somehow, and I don't know if this is true. This is just what my dream expressed, that I had asked her to come into my soul plan as a very difficult person in my life. And, you know, I think about that a lot because I live near the beach. I walk the beach all the time. And my favorite thing to collect are not seashells. My favorite thing to collect are those smooth stones. Because I look at those stones and I think about all the years of being battered by sand and waves and hurricanes that this rough, gritted stone had to endure to become this beautiful, smooth, polished stone. And I collect those. I have a huge jar of them in my kitchen because I like to think that the difficult people in our life, the challenging relationships, yes, it's hard to go through it. I get that. Trust me. But They're smoothing up all of our rough patches. They're making us whole again. It's hard to see it in the moment. But again, this is why I am so invested in dreams, because if I hadn't had that dream experience, I don't think I would have looked at my challenging relationship with my mom in that way.
Isn't that interesting? Well, at least you were able to make a bit of sense of it.
Yeah, for sure. And thank her. It was nice to be able to thank her in that dream.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, life becomes more bearable if you believe that there is a purpose to it all. And, you know, I kind of think, you know, I'm very lucky to have done what I've done. I've never had a proper job. I've always been behind a microphone. It was what I wanted to do, and I just kind of programmed to make it happen. I was never in any doubt, however difficult for somebody from my background it might have been to do this. You know, I wanted to do it. I've done it, which is great. But there have been hell times. I mean, I'll write about them one day. There have been hell times in this industry that I've been involved in all of these years. And it's great to be producing my own stuff now. But I've got to an age now. Isn't that interesting that you should talk about that? That I believe that it's all been to an end. And, you know, the story is going to have a nice conclusion to it. It'll all be tied up in a bow. But all of that garbage, I nearly used another word there, all of that garbage that I've been through has all been part of the route map to whatever. I think some people are going to accuse me of waffling on this. I must stop doing that.
No, but it's made you stronger and more resilient. And, you know, we're all better off for it because I can't tell you how many times do you ever have those stressful days where your thoughts are just spinning and you're reeling and you can't focus on what you have to do next? Mm-hmm. I put on your voice and it calms me right down.
Now, isn't that interesting? What, you're talking about me?
Yes, I'm talking about you. Your voice in particular, it just soothes my soul.
Now, here is a strange thing, okay? You know, I mean, we've talked a lot of stuff here that, and I've revealed a few things here, and so have you. I get emails from people now who tell me what you've just told me. And that is something, that's an aspect of doing this that I found hard to come to terms with. And I found at the beginning, I thought, well, that's really bizarre and strange. How could I be doing that? You know, physician, heal thyself. Sometimes when I'm in a turmoil, I'll do a podcast and, you know, it's part of showbiz. Sometimes you don't feel great, but you can always, that's your job. You perform. You can perform even, I've, you know, broadcast under awful circumstances, bereavement and breakups and all kinds of stuff, and you go on and you do it. Sometimes you do it better when you're challenged like that. But I get messages from people telling me, and maybe there are others who do this too, I'm sure there are, they probably do it much better than me, that there's a form of communication, maybe between all of us, that goes beyond the thing that we're talking about and the words that we're using.
Yeah, the energy, the intent behind it, and we can't really know in the moment. And I think that's what's so important. We can't know in the moment what good we're doing. It's really only when we are open and able to hear that feedback. And I think that's why it's so important to just put yourself in that state of allowing and just say to, again, no label, God, Goddess, Creator, you know, use me to do your will. I'm here to share in the light of this world, however that looks. And I know some people, I have a friend and she had this very powerful dream where she was told her purpose was to motivate people. And she was like, I sell houses. Like, how am I going to motivate people? You know, she could not make sense of that dream. And then her real estate company asked her to go to all the different brokerage firms on the whole East Coast and give motivational speeches to salespeople about, you know, keeping up with the times of houses and falling markets and all of that. And so she's doing that. Same thing with you, though, Howard. What she's getting are emails from other salespeople saying, thank you so much for giving me hope to keep doing this, to keep trying. And it wasn't what she was saying, like how to survive a difficult housing market. It was how she was saying it and connecting with others that was really helping people.
Well, I wasn't intending to talk about any of this, really, but I think there's something there, really. I do. I think sometimes it's not necessarily what you're talking about. And sometimes it's just because of the interaction, the traffic, the interplay between people. And that maybe works on a level that we don't fully comprehend, but it seems to have effects. And it's strange that you should have said that to me. We say here in England, you could have knocked me down with a feather when you said that. quite bizarre. Anything that we haven't talked about that we should have?
No, but I wasn't going to say it. I have to be honest, because I was like, oh, Samantha, you're going to sound like such a brown noser.
No, it's just, it's very strange, because I have had emails from people like that, and I thought, well, if I am some, you know, if some of us are, maybe all of us, but, you know, if some of us are giving another message that is subliminal, I'm a strange candidate to pick, because I've got a ton of my own, you know, issues, as we all have. But it all works on some strange level. I've loved this conversation, Samantha.
Oh, I have too.
And I'm going to do a little experiment here. You know, I have a tiny bit of a psychic sense here. And a weird thing happened while we were talking, okay? And I'll just conclude it with this. You talked about going on the beach. And I saw a picture. Now, this probably means absolutely nothing to you, so I'm going to cut this out of the conversation if that is the case. You're on the beach, and I saw a picture of you walking through the sand in blue sandals. Do you have blue sandals?
I do have blue sandals, and I'm wearing a blue top right now.
All right. Okay.
That's amazing.
Okay. Well, you're walking on the beach with your blue sandals.
Blue sandals.
Okay. I take what you say on face value. I don't know. I saw you on the beach in the blue sandals.
Blue's my favorite color. Look at you, Howard. That's amazing.
Now, you know,
take a picture of them and send them to you.
No, please
navy
do.
Blue sandals.
And I know that some of my more skeptical listeners, and I totally get where you would be coming from, will say, oh, for God's sake, that's just random. Listen, I've been living this life, even though I was a news guy and did hard news for a lot of it. Nothing is really random. That's my message for you. And Samantha, thank you very much. I'm sure we will talk again. Let me know what are you working on at the moment? Let's put it that way.
Well, I'm working on two books right now. One is looking at the commonalities of different near-death experiences throughout different religions and cultures. And the other one is about how to be the light, how to really share and embrace your soul purpose and connect with the light within and around us.
If people want to know more about you, what's your website?
It's SamanthaFey.com.
That's F-E-Y. Samantha, thank you very much indeed. Give my love to North Carolina.
Oh, thank you so much. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
Guest on this edition, Samantha Fey, on the subject of dreaming and many other things. Let me know what you thought about her and all guests here on The Unexplained. We have more gigantic guests for you here on The Unexplained as we come to the end of 2023. So until we meet next, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.